What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Welcome back in, hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions, right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to be joined by our friend Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel coming up at 7:30. Get his thoughts on the Vols, including some gigantic news on Sunday that Hendon Hooker back at quarterback for Tennessee. Looking forward to that conversation coming up here in about 30 minutes at 7:30. Right now, talking Nashville Predators, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. And Joe Rexroad, the Nashville Predators are red hot. They've won five games in a row. They sweep the four-game road trip this past week. They were originally scheduled to play the Flames tonight at Bridgestone Arena, and that game has been postponed due to a COVID outbreak for the Calgary Flames. So Calgary, basically all their games for this week have been postponed at this point. And the Predators now off until Thursday night, when they'll host the red-hot Colorado Avalanche as well, coming in on Thursday before going to Chicago on Friday for a back-to-back. As we sit here today, the Predators have won five games in a row, and they sit in second place in the Central Division behind the Minnesota Wild. They are tied with the St. Louis Blues for 35 points. What have you learned about this Predators team so far? And as we sit here today, 28 games into the season, they're in second place in the Central. Have we seen enough to think maybe this is what they are? What are your thoughts on the Predators and what they've been able to accomplish so far this season?
Well, first of all, correct me if I'm wrong, I would say that Thursday's game is the first, to me, it feels like the first big game of the year. Now, there's a lot of big games, but let's face it. You got 82 games in a season. It's been great to see a normal season and playing all the different teams, and there's been some big matchups. But to me, this is the first, like, okay, let's see how you match up.
Yep.
Colorado started out poorly. Like you said, they're hot now. I still think, I mean, look, we know what they are. They are a tremendously gifted team and a big threat to do big stuff. So this is and a very different kind of team from Nashville, right? And which is just one thing. I think you see the contrast a little bit, right? And how the Predators have transformed in the past few years to all of a sudden, like, they're the heavy bruising team that you don't want to mess with. You know, I mean, it still is kind of funny to talk about. So to me, that's one thing I've learned, is that they've been able to carry that over. And they've been able to, I mean, John Hines has preached this over and over again, but like, when they play the way he wants them to play, you create offense out of that. You can create offense out of that. I've learned that Matt Duchene still has a fastball. And frankly, I didn't know if the last couple of years just indicated, you know, a guy who isn't old in age, but is old in the league. I mean, that's a lot of years being slammed in the boards in this league. And I was open to the idea. Maybe it's, you know, he's just fading as a player. I think we see now he's got some juice left, and that's a huge deal, because they still probably don't have enough guys like that. But when he's playing like that, and now you have Forsberg back in there, I think you have enough. You have a good, well-rounded team. I like the defense core. I think we've learned that the people who were Ryan Ellis haters might have been a little bit on the right side of history. Again, Ryan Ellis was a heck of a player here, outstanding player here, but it was a good time to move on from him. It was probably a good time to move on from Victor Arvidsson. So I just think a lot of things have gone their way, and I've learned that they're a playoff-caliber team. I picked them to go to the playoffs, but I did not think they would be this good.
A couple of things stand out to me when watching them this year, and I think you hit on one of them pretty well. The way they play the game, how physical they are, I think they fully embrace and know the way that they have to play to win. Like, I think the Thursday night game is really a good example. Number one, I agree with you. It feels like a huge game. I know it's December. It'll be December 16th on Thursday night. You're like, all right, how many big games in the NHL can you have in December? This feels like a pretty big one coming up on Thursday night for the Predators, and a test to see if the way that they're playing right now can help you hang in there with some of these top teams. I'm interested to see on home ice, number one, can Matt Duchene play? Is he back and available? Is Ryan Johansson going to be available for this game? Those are two obviously huge questions in this matchup against Colorado. But can the Predators get Colorado in their style of game? I think you and I would both agree you don't want to get into a trading chances track meet with Colorado because you're going to lose that battle 9 times out of 10. There's just no question about it. But can the Predators play their style of game against these top teams and be that frustrating team to play against? Because to me, that's the path. And we've seen them do that more often than not this year. We talked about it on Preds Insiders yesterday. Like the next step is, can you do that against some of the elite teams? Like Edmonton didn't go well this year. Vegas didn't go very well for the Predators this year. This is another opportunity against Colorado coming up on Thursday to see if that can happen. But one thing that just kind of floors me when I watch this team that is so evident now as we have, enough sample size to look back on it, they are so mentally tough now. When something bad happens, they just keep going. They keep digging, and it's from the top down in their lineup. We were thinking about yesterday, just go back to the Winter Classic game against Dallas, where you're up 2-0 in that game. It's this fun environment. Everything seems to be going well. And all of a sudden, Ryan Ellis gets knocked out of the game, and Dallas gets one goal, and the wheels completely fall off of that Predators team. And that happened time and time and time again with that group until ultimately Peter Laviolette was gone. And John Hines got here, and basically it was almost like he was in, some like psychological session with this group every day of having to send messages to the top guys and doing all these different things to get them motivated and to not kick themselves when they're down and be able to dig themselves out of holes. And that took a while. That's not a problem with this team anymore. They just keep on playing. They keep on chugging along. And it's impressive to watch. It really is. I think there is a buy-in from the top down, and I think that's part of what we're seeing from Matt Duchene this year. I don't know that even as they were entering into the playoffs last year that everyone was totally bought into the way this team needs to play to be successful. It feels like everyone is bought in right now. And look, I would point to 2 years ago when Matt Duchene first got here and look at that team, and I would say, yeah, that team was probably more talented than this team. But this team, I don't think there's any way to deny it, is light years better than that team. And there are so many intangible parts about this team, coupled with Duchene scoring, Forsberg scoring, Ryan Johansson scoring, and Roman Josi playing at an elite level that you feel great about. So look, I don't know that finishing in second in the Central Division is ultimately where this team is going to end up. By the way, Colorado's right now in fourth, and I'm here to tell you, they're not going to stay in fourth. I mean, they've scored a ton of goals as of late, and Colorado's probably still going to win the division. So I don't know that the Predators are going to finish in the top two or anything like that, but man, was I wrong on seventh. I had them in seventh heading into this year, and I've seen enough at this point to realize that is not what they are. They are a playoff team.
Well, I think that's a great point about mental toughness. I mean, they've had, you've mixed in a few stinkers this year. The game at Montreal comes to mind. I mean, they gave up 6 goals in back-to-back Saturdays to Montreal and Colorado. And granted, Colorado was a terrible back-to-back, road coming off a home game. But for the most part, I agree. And that was such an issue with those teams. And my question then is, why? I mean, it sounds like a lot of what you said there really is crediting John Hines. I mean,
yes.
I don't know where else to look. I mean, certainly there are a lot of the same players are on this team that were there a couple years ago, right?
Yep.
So you can look at individually each guy, getting better or figuring it out or whatever, but it seems to be the things that Hines has stressed over and over and over again, like you said, finally have sort of sort of infiltrated the whole team to their benefit. I also think that this is representative of David Poile maybe course correcting a little bit, very much emphasizing speed, right, and skill, and trying to be more dangerous offensively. And then at some point saying, you know what, we're getting the crap beat out of us, and our stars are getting the crap beat out of them, and we need people who can play, who can also, you know, be physical presences on the ice. And I mean, look how much bigger and stronger they are.
Yeah.
Apart from like style of play, just size on the team, you know, with some of their support players, very different than what it was a couple years ago.
We'll continue the conversation on the Predators. Bob, hang with us on our phone line. We'll get to you coming up after the break. Take your thoughts on our text line as well, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. What have you learned about this Predators team 28 games into the season? We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll actually have that opportunity coming up for you on Thursday, now with the Predators game postponed today against Calgary. Speaking of the Predators, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Bob from Antioch, who wants to weigh in on the Preds. Bob, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Good morning, guys. I'm a day one season ticket holder, and my belief is that the style of play that the Predators have this year is more appealing to their foundation fan base than the flashy, we've got more talent, style of a couple of years ago. And I wanted to get your opinion on that. And also, even though the players are bigger and probably a little bit more talented, how similar is this style of play under Hines to the style of play that they had when Trotz was their coach?
Thanks for the call, Bob. We appreciate it. It's funny that Bob brings that up, because I was having a conversation with somebody last week about just this team, the way that they've been playing, and one of the things that they threw out there was, doesn't it kind of remind you of like the 08, 09, 10 Predators? And we talked about that yesterday on Preds Insiders as well. I mean, I think back to those Barry Trotz teams of, you know, right after Paul Kariya leaves. I mean, I still contend like the 07 Predators team may have been the most talented group they've ever put together in the history of their franchise. And it was basically a fire sale that offseason in 08, 09, 10, 11. And it was basically like Shea Weber leading the way with Ryan Suter and Pekka Rinne. And they just had scrappy guys around them that were able to play well enough in the regular season to get into the playoffs. Ultimately, when they got to 2011, they were good enough to win a playoff series for the first time against Anaheim and took Vancouver to the wall in six games. Like, this team kind of reminds me of that group a little bit. Now, I will say, I think the top-end guys on this team are more talented than those teams. So when you're talking about your Duchesnes, your Forsbergs, your Johansons, I mean, the Predators, they didn't have anybody like those guys in those years. As good as, you know, your David Legwands and your Martin Erats of the world were, they were not Forsberg, you know, Johansson, and Duchesne. So there's more skill on this team than I think a lot of people want to give it credit for. But certainly the way that they play reminds me of those teams, and I think that's a really good thing. And I think, you know, to a certain degree, Bob's right. I think that's appealing to the day one fans here. Now, I also think, if you told me that you were going to trot out the 06-07 Preds again that were that talented, I think Preds fans probably take that too.
Yeah, like, I hear you, Bob. I do, and I think you're right. There's certainly an appeal to toughness and soundness and physicality and all that stuff. I think it's fun to watch guys who can fly around the ice and score some goals too, right? Like it's there's a balance. I mean, like, I'll go back to my fandom days. I very much liked watching the Russian Five play. People yep. ripped on them all the time. They were soft. I was like, we'll take these guys. I'll take Fedorov and, you know, Slava Kozlov. Yeah. I'm cool with these guys.
Pretty
now,
good.
They didn't win cups until, in comes the grind line and Chris Draper and Malt Bean, all these guys. You know, they did have to By the way, Vladimir Konstantinov was one of the most just monster defensemen ever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in his day, but they had to sort of find that balance too, but it still was paired with ridiculous offensive skill. So I think you're right that like a lot of fans, especially people who love hockey, like Bob, obviously day one, he's a hockey guy, right? I think you'd rather see a scrappy team that fights and claws than an underachieving skilled team. Oh, like yeah. A couple years ago, it was hard to watch. I mean, it was often many nights. It was hard to watch them play, and it is not hard to watch them play now. And that's a credit to, I think, as we said last time, I mean, I think you have to give a good bulk of it to John Hines and his staff, because they've gradually turned this over. And then of course you get some, you know, you get a Jeannot coming in and you're like, oh, okay, this is where, I mean, it's not all the coaching staff, of course, but I do think that you have to give them a pretty good chunk of the credit.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Scott in Hendersonville texting in. Look to the Preds, who were part of the 2019-2020 Milwaukee Admirals team that dominated the AHL. Enough of them are now in Nashville, and their attitude is driving the whole team, spurring the big money guys to play like big money guys. This coming from Scott in Hendersonville. And I've heard that of, just take a look, and we've talked about it, take a look at that Milwaukee team and how good it was and how many of those guys are now here with the way that they play. I do think, especially last year, that was a big part of what we saw. I think it's gone to a different level this year in terms of your top-end guys are now totally bought in.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, I mean, look, even go to – I think you made a good point. You know, even going to the playoffs, they made the run to the playoffs. The young guys, I think, spurred it, and then the veterans kind of followed that lead, actually. But it wasn't necessarily a full-on buy-in. I mean, I don't think everybody was happy with John Hines' lineups in some of those games.
Yep.
Or some of his decisions. You know, Duchesne had the game-winning goal the night he was taking off the power play, you know, against Carolina. There was still a lot of question of, okay, are these guys going to come together? Is this all going to be on the same page? And it sounds like Matt Duchesne has talked a few times about did he and Hines lock themselves in a room for like 10 straight hours?
It basically sounds like Matt Duchesne and John Hines and Ryan Johansson and Philip Forsberg basically had like a come to Jesus meeting this offseason is basically what it sounds like.
Did they go fishing? Did they go hiking? Like, what did they do? They apparently talked for quite a while, but yeah, they came to an understanding. I don't know how much that has to do with Duchesne just going gangbusters to start this season. But to your point, now it seems like it's across the board buy-in. I don't know what that means for like what this team could do down the road, but I'd say they're pretty dangerous. When you have a goaltender like they have playing at the level he's playing and you have a lot of other things going for you, you could be interesting in the postseason.
Melissa from Gallatin texting in. I've been pleasantly surprised by the Preds this year. They seem to have the grit, determination, and focus that some teams of the past have lacked. It's been super fun to watch some of the beautiful assists and goals that our top guys have had, and I really can't say enough about the play of Roman Josi. It's top stuff and so exciting. I hope they can keep it up. And that, to me, I'm glad Melissa brought that up. Josi has been so good this year, and we've talked about this. I felt like last year, especially early, he saw what was going on around him and said, golly, I've got to do everything. And he tried to do everything, and that just doesn't work. As good as Roman Josi is, even Roman Josi can get outside of himself a little bit, and I think we saw that last year. It got better as the season went on. I think he's totally bought into not only the system, but I think he's bought into his role and the role of his teammates around him to where he knows – he doesn't have to do everything. He can just play his game. And oftentimes when he just plays his game is good enough to take over by itself.
Yeah, he's been ridiculous. And by the way, if you want to talk about tough team, physical team, to play the right way, all that stuff, you know, it helps to have some elite skill.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and Josi is – to me, he's got to be the Norris favorite at this point, right?
He's at least. I mean, Cale Makar's been awesome. Hedman's been great, but I mean, he's right there. He's right there with those guys.
And it's just you know, when if these top line guys can sustain it, and that is a question, and health's a question too, then I feel like this team maybe is not going to be in some sort of, you know, scramble at the bottom of the conference, you know, come playoff time. They might be, you know, might be fighting for hosting a home series.
And very quickly, we've got a lot of text on our text line that we're not going to be able to get to before we get to Adam Sparks. But a common theme in a lot of them is, man, this team is fun to watch. And I was wondering, like early in the season, I was wondering about that. Honestly, from the fan base, I was like, there's not much buzz. Like, why are Predators fans not excited about this group? Because typically, I mean, regardless of what the expectations are, that's been the case for the last decade, is lots of fan buy-in. I didn't think there really was to begin the season. There is now. I can. There's a tangible difference in, I think, fan reaction to this team now.
Well, right off the jump, they look so offensively limited,
yeah,
too. And, yeah, you saw it in the building. It's going to be interesting, and maybe Thursday will be one, something that's worth watching. Like, is there more just buzz around the building? Is it more full? I mean, that's – you know, how much has this team's 28-game play gotten people on board?
When we come back, we'll switch gears, get into the Tennessee Vols. We'll be joined by our friend Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Vols, and to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Adam, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Busy, busy, busy week.
Yes, it is.
If we could just all vote right now to move signing day away from the bowl schedule, I'll go ahead and cast my vote. I wasn't in love with the early February, but I'll take it back in a second. Now I prefer the, like, a mid January, maybe a compromise. But I don't know if I can find anybody in media coaching anybody that loves this. Let's pack in Thanksgiving, end of regular season, Christmas, bowl practice, signing day, all into like 3 weeks. Nobody's got to like this.
They should be, you know, considering media in these things more often, you know?
Yes, they should.
That's right. Well, Adam, we appreciate you taking time to join us today. Got a lot to get to with you. And we'll start with the Hendon Hooker news. Obviously a big deal for the Vols that he's back at quarterback next year. What does this do in your mind for not only the offense next year, but really the expectations for this Tennessee team as they head in next season?
Well, I mean, I think the expectations are probably, I don't know, two wins better. We don't know who they would have gotten. They still could go and get somebody in the transfer portal, a quarterback, because they still don't have the numbers there. So we don't know who the starter would have been next year, but Hendon Hooker is a really good option, and he's proven. And, you know, this year they're 7-5. I think if they don't have him, they're probably about 5-7. I think you can push those expectations onto next year and say that, you know, if the quarterback didn't work out well, maybe they're a 7-5 team again with him. I think 9-3 is very reasonable. I don't think 10-2 is even crazy. Now, I wouldn't pick them 10-2 right now, but, you know, they have a soft non-conference schedule next year. You know, they'll lose to Alabama and Georgia. But, I mean, it does so many things for what you wanted to do this year you'll get next year. For example, Florida was Hendon Hooker's second start, and they kind of got the offense cranked up the next week and never really slowed down after that. You'll have him from day one next year. So the offense, if it's running like it did this year to start next year, you can finally beat Florida, which means you could start 4-0. You've got LSU after that. If the offense is still cranking and that's another new coach, maybe you're 5-0. You know, it just does so many things of being able to start well, where this year it was more of a month and a half of still trying to figure things out. That's what it does for them. It just it makes them maybe look like what Ole Miss did this year with Matt Corral coming back. Ole Miss won, what, 10 games because they had a quarterback and they had an offense and they knew what they were doing. Tennessee can do that next year because Hendon Hooker's come back. Not saying they will, but it's certainly a possibility now.
Yeah, no, that's a good comparison. Are you surprised, Adam, at the decision? We I mean, we've talked about this. You know, I mean, I think we both agreed, or we all agreed, you know, 50-50-ish kind of decision. Are you surprised ultimately he made this when he did? And how much do you think, like, the earning potential of being Tennessee's starting star, possible preseason All-American quarterback was a factor here?
Yeah, it's hard to judge these NIL things. I think we look back 5 years from now, there's going to be a lot of stuff that we'll see that we didn't understand for NIL from year 1 to 2 and 2 to 3 and so on. I do think there's some opportunities there. He's pretty marketable to a certain extent. I mean, he's a very well-liked, very humble. A lot of companies will gravitate to that. If you look at his social media, it's what a lot of businesses will like. You know, it's funny. I did a story on Alante Taylor, the cookie monster that the cookie company here, Moonshine Mountain Cookie Company, and I asked them about how they decided on the NIL deal that they did with him, and they said they looked at a whole lot of candidates, and really it came down to they weeded out a lot of them because of social media, and they looked at Alante Taylor and some others and said, this is, we like the message here. There's nothing that would embarrass us here, and people will look at Hendon Hooker's social media and his how he carries himself and that sort of thing, and like what they see. And so there'll be some earning potential there. There's no doubt. I mean, you also got to look at the draft. He was going to be a late-round pick probably. Does he improve that much another year? Maybe, but I just ultimately think that's a, you know, Hendon Hooker is a guy that's probably his best football is going to be in college in the SEC. Why not string it out another year and maybe make a little money while you're doing it?
Adam, what do you think this means for Joe Milton as he sits and looks at the quarterback situation? Now, obviously, we know he can throw the ball from Knoxville to Daytona Beach, but what do you think this means in terms of his future? Is it at Tennessee, or do you think he goes elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because he's already used that one waiver year where you go and play immediately. You know, he would transfer again. He would still have years to go, but there's a possibility he would have to sit out. Who knows what the NCAA will do now with these transfers. It just depends on who he's listening to and what he wants to do. I mean, we always assume that all these quarterbacks, you know, are dying to be the starter, the guy, and I'm not so sure if that's him or not. To me, ever since he lost his job, he doesn't seem terribly uncomfortable as being the backup and a little bit out of the spotlight. But, you know, but then you go and talk to advisors and former coaches and family and all that, and sometimes you're told enough that, you know, you should be a Power 5 starter somewhere, and so then you jump into the transfer portal. And we can see the portal expanding, you know, every minute now with guys that are making the right decisions but also guys making the wrong decisions. And I think Joe Milton is a Power 5 backup at best, and he's maybe a starter at the mid-major level, and that's his ceiling. If he wants to, if he thinks that, then jump in and go start for a Sun Belt team. But otherwise, I would advise him to stay put. And it just depends on what advice he's going to listen to.
Man, I know I must be just a Joe Milton homer, but I don't think that's the ceiling. I mean, he needs to stop throwing the ball and busting holes in the ceiling. I still think the guy has a ton of potential, but I think you're probably right at this point. It's like, well, what are you going to do, and what is his option right now? Tennessee would be great for Tennessee if he would stay. Then you have a experienced backup if you need him next year. Hooker gets hurt, and actually he does have a year after that. He could. I know Tennessee fans probably don't like to hear this, but, you know, Joe Milton could be in line to be like a, what, 25-year-old starting quarterback for you in 2023? I mean, we don't know who's coming right after Hooker at this point, right? You're well, down on him. You don't think he can be that good.
Well, I think Josh Heupel's fine if he's around because he knows he can run the offense and finish out a game, which is what you ask your backup quarterback to be. But I don't think Josh Heupel has a plan in place. I think if we go and look at his depth chart, planned out for 3 years from now, I don't think Joe Milton is ever QB1 on any of those years. I just don't believe that. I think it could happen in some circumstances. I don't think it's going to happen here.
Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam, last thing for you here. How is Josh Heupel and company doing on the recruiting trail? We looked at it a couple of weeks ago, and that was a concern for some Tennessee fans. It seems like they're generating some momentum.
I think grading on a curve is a good way to do it. You know, when he came in, when Jeremy Pruitt was fired, this is unlike most situations. He came in where he had a year to recruit, but they couldn't even do in-person recruiting because of COVID protocol until the summer. So you're behind there. You're trying to salvage the class that was left over from Pruitt. You've got the NCAA sanctions possibly looming. And so despite all that, 24/7 has them ranked 18th in the country. Some people think, well, that's pretty good. Some people think that's not so good. If you look at UT's last five classes, they averaged a number 17 ranking. If you look at their last 10 classes, they averaged a 15 ranking. UT's at 18 right now. They're probably going to be around the mid-teens when this is over. They've got four stars and 2 3 stars that they are trying to pull in at the end here. I don't think they get all six of those guys. They will get one or two of them. But that will push them up probably in the mid-teens, which is where they've been for the last decade. So considering the circumstances, I'd probably give Josh Heupel's staff about a B+ for what they've done.
Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Adam, we know this is a busy week. Go ahead.
Sorry. Hold. I'm sorry. Before you go, though, Brian Kelly gave us a wonderful Southern accent.
Yes.
It's only right that you, who has one of the greatest Southern accents I've ever heard, gives us your Boston accent.
I'd have to go watch The Departed 3 or 4 times, I think, before I get or Goodwill Hunting or something before I get. I did love the
park the car, Lee. Adam. Park the car.
I won't even attempt it. Family, though, wasn't that the word that he dragged out?
Yes. Oh yeah,
that was even 2 syllables long for Louisiana. Also, Louisiana and Tennessee are completely different dialects.
Yes. Yes,
no doubt.
That is correct.
But yours is elite. We can all agree on that.
That's right. That's right. I'm trying to bring in some East Tennessee, though. There's a little nasally here. I'm trying that. West Tennessee is slow, kind of a slow draw. Middle Tennessee, you drop the R's. And East Tennessee is a little more high-pitched up in the mountains. So I'm trying to blend all three of them.
Very nicely done. Adam, we appreciate you taking time to join us, my man.
All right, we'll see you.
Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. One of my favorite people to talk to. That accent is awesome. Brian Kelly has nothing on Adam Sparks.
And now I want to see like Sparks and Mike Wilson in one of those little videos where their cameras circling them as they dance around a terrible
Colin Baton Rouge from Garth Brooks. Did you just call Garth Brooks terrible?
I didn't say he was terrible. It's fine.
Joe?
It's fine.
That was a shot. That was not good.
You know what song I'm playing when we're coming back.
That's right.
Hall & Oates, I hope.
We'll come back. We'll get your thoughts on the Vols. How big a deal is it that Hendon Hooker is back at starting quarterback for Tennessee? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Bowl season is the best season for ESPN The Game. Nashville is your home for college football playoff games and college football bowl games as well. Brought to you by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown and Central Barbecue. 312 Pizza Company is the perfect spot to catch every game during the bowl season. For a list of games carried on 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9, hit up our website at thegamenashville.com/bowl games. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, live from the Hillside Medical Games studio. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezovic here with you. A little Garth Brooks, Colin Baton Rouge bringing us back in, who we found out in the last segment, Joe Rexroad hates. So good to know there on the program.
Come on now. I like Garth Brooks. I've made it clear I like. Actually, this song's kind of, I kind of like this song.
Well, I like this song too. It's one of his best ones. I will say, as someone who's listened to Garth Brooks for more than 25 years at this point, I now can't hear that song without thinking about a swirling camera and Brian Kelly bouncing up and down anymore. So thanks to Brian Kelly for ruining that for me. It's good stuff.
Also, we did a karaoke night on our 102.5 The Game 10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
And Chase McCabe and Caroline Fenton performed this song.
Yeah.
Top notch.
Bet they brought the house down with that
Top
one.
Top notch.
Good
didn't,
stuff.
Didn't Stillman sing like One Direction or something?
He sang Steal My Girl by One Direction. And in that moment, I knew that Jared Stillman would be a friend of mine.
Yeah.
Because I am quite the One Direction fan.
Yep. Wish I could have seen that.
Really sad I wasn't there.
Robbie, I've got some videos. Don't worry, guys. I'll share them.
Oh, boy. Thanks to Adam Sparks.
I've seen the videos.
Oh, yes, I have too. I wish I could unsee them. Thanks to Adam Sparks for joining us in the last segment. Rexro, what do you make of what Sparks threw out there that Hendon Hooker coming back in, maybe 9-3, maybe even 10-2, not off the table for the Vols next year? That'd be something.
I mean, let's let the wild speculation run free. Why not? Look, it's – I mean, okay, I'm going to have to go through the schedule now. Obviously, the big, tough one, quote-unquote, is at Pitt, but they lose a ton, including their Heisman finalist quarterback. So, yep. And now it's still on the road. It's still – you know, it's a good program. I mean, they've – you know, they've got some good players. It's not just going to be waltzed in there and have you, you know, do whatever you want. But, I mean, I think that's certainly a winnable non-league game.
Friend of the show, Pat Narduzzi.
That's right. We'll have to get the doozy on before that. But, yeah, I mean, that Florida game, I mean, I agree. Like, this is an opportunity to have a nice build-up. You hope to be 3-0, and then you get those guys coming into your place. I mean, it's a real opportunity to get those guys one time. And, like, you know, what is LSU next year? I don't know. I do think that for all – I mean, and believe me, like, that video, especially, like, when he's, like, slow motion, like, disco duck from 1977, whatever the hell he's doing. It's like, how is that a great football coach? But he is. He's a really, really good coach. So I suspect he'll have the Tigers, you know, playing pretty well, and he's inheriting plenty of talent. Is that a no-chancer? No, I would not say that. I mean, I think you got a chance there. I think you go ahead and put L next to Alabama and Georgia, and then you go through the rest of the schedule. I mean, it's not bad. It's not a bad deal. You know,
the South Carolina game just got a little bit more interesting with Spencer Rattler ending up there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a great get for Shane Beamer. That's like a big deal for them. But, of course, if anybody watched Spencer Rattler play, there's a reason he just, you know, went to South Carolina. Like, yeah. It's – I don't totally understand what's going on with him. But maybe they figure him out. There's no question he has a lot of physical ability. But, I mean, you go through that schedule, I think 9-3 is absolutely on the table. And if you could – go sneak one out of LSU. I mean, shoot. Alabama, I'll put an L. Alabama's going to be ridiculous next year, right?
Yes.
Like, they're – yeah, that's just – but even, like, Georgia, I know, like, they recruit so well that you shouldn't even entertain it. But they are losing a lot of people from this team. I mean, this is the old Georgia team, old in a good way, in college sports speak, that – should be able to handle the young Alabama team, right? Next year, like, that's – even that team, I don't know exactly what they'll be. I suspect they'll be very good because, again, he's been stacking classes. But, yeah, to come back around to the question, 9-3, it's not crazy. It's not at all. And my question is, what does it mean? It was so impressive to see the offense operate the way it did, the precision, the play calling, the game playing, all that stuff. What does it mean to have a full off season knowing who your quarterback is? Like, how much better can it get? I don't know. Maybe not a ton better. Maybe it can get way better. I was just so impressed with Hooker this year and what he did once he got his opportunity, and it basically got better and better as time went on.
Well, and also, what does this mean for the quarterback room now? Hendon Hooker, I mean, unquestionably going to be the starter as they move into next season. What does happen with Joe Milton? You've got Taven Jackson coming in, which is a four-star recruit out of Indiana. It'll be interesting to see what the quarterback room looks like next year. And, you know, the thing that to remember about Milton is he did use the transfer. So does he just hang out at Tennessee? I'm really interested to see now that Hooker is officially back what ends up going on with Joe Milton. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like at this point.
If he really likes where he is and he likes his teammates and the offense and all that stuff, I don't think it's the worst plan in the world to be Hendon Hooker's backup in 2022 and keep working and try to be the Tennessee starting quarterback in 2023. And I disagree with Sparks. And I know that you're totally out on Milton too, and I feel like a majority of the Tennessee fan base is out on Milton. I don't buy that his ceiling is that low. I think his ceiling is high. I just don't know that he can get there. I mean, look, you know, it's hard. It's hard to change your jump shot at a certain age. It's hard to fundamentally change, your touch on a deep ball at a certain age. But you know what? He has a lot going for him, I think. And who's your backup for Hooker next year? And who's your successor to Hooker? I mean, Taven Jackson's coming in, you know, but I mean, it may have to be a more portal work. I think it'd be great to have the continuity. I disagree too with Sparks that like Heupel's like, yeah, whatever. I think he's high on Joe Milton, has been high on him. Obviously, he didn't get it done on the field this year, and I'm with you. The end of the game against Ole Miss, and you can't unsee that. But I think he would very much love to have Joe Milton as his two next year.
When we come back, we'll be joined by our friend John Glennon from SI.com. Get his thoughts on the Titans, including a couple exchanges between Glennon and Vrabel this past week. Really fun to watch on that front. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluff Mobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.